I was referred to a speaker by a friend of mine right here in Sugar Land. Went and had lunch with him and found out that in 1986,
89,
he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And I said, well, come over to my group. Never heard him speak, mentoring him a little bit. And I said, come give us 15 minutes and let's see what you got. So welcome the Super Kid to the stage. Yes, sir. Woo!
When I was 18 years old, I was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. National record holder for the most consecutive wins by a high school pitcher. 51 wins, zero losses. First high school baseball player ever to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And here it is right here. May 8th, 1989. Now, as you look at this, you may be thinking the same thing that a lot of people thought back then, that I had it all. I mean, really, what else could I want? I had fame, I had success, I had athletic ability, I had a college scholarship, plus I was dating the most beautiful girl in school. Wow. But okay. The truth was, inside,
back in here before,
I was absolutely dying. I was emotionally dead, I was spiritually dead, and I wanted to be physically dead. In fact, the night before the world would come to know me as Super Kid, I got in a fight with my girlfriend, stormed out of her house. And on my way home, I screamed at God, I'm done with baseball. I'm done with relationships. I'm done with the media. I'm done with life. I'm done. And as I walked into the house, I grabbed a bottle of Tylenol, large glass of water, and proceeded to my bedroom, and I took all those pills, just like I won all those games. One after another after another. I was done. And I could see the headlines on the newspaper say, pitching phenom dead, suspected overdose. The next morning, the alarm wakes me up. And my first thought was, I'm such a loser. I can't even kill myself. Those thoughts, that negative mentality would continue for a long, long time. Ever since I was 6 years old, that's all I wanted to do was play baseball. And that's pretty much all I did. And over time, I got really good at it. I was fortunate. I grew up in a town that many of you know, Brenham, Texas. It's known for the baseball capital of Texas, but many of you probably know it for its famous Bluebell homemade vanilla ice cream. But Brenham loved baseball, and there was no coincidence that that's where I was raised. We grew up on some acreage outside of town, 20 acres, so we had plenty of room to roam, to do whatever we wanted. And if you ever saw me in town or you saw me at the house, I always had a baseball glove and I always had a baseball. And if you wanted to play catch with me, you were going to be my best friend because that's all I wanted to do was play baseball. My dream was to be the best baseball pitcher in the whole world. I wanted to be number one. My mentality from an early age was, no one ever remembers who got second, but they remember who got first. And that's the person I wanted to be. And so I worked hard, and that's all I did was play baseball. My mother was a PE teacher at the elementary school, and she had played softball during her college years. And my dad, he was a track athlete in high school, very good track athlete. My dad chose to kind of party instead of go to university. He could have gone on a scholarship, but he decided he was going to party. I would inherit some of that. But my parents played catch with me all the time. And my mother, she would be the catcher. And my dad would stand right behind me, and he would serve as my coach. He wouldn't say much, but when he did talk, I usually listened. And I can remember him always saying, "John, just throw it right at the mitt. Throw it right at the mitt." And over time, I became really, really good at putting the ball wherever I wanted. One day, my dad came home and he said, "Hey, you want to build a mound in the backyard?" I was like, "Yeah, let's do it." And so we got local contractor, brought some dirt in, the dirt that Texas A&M used. I researched how high it should be, how wide it should be. And one whole day, my dad and I made a mound in the backyard. And that was my pride and joy. Every day, I was on that mound. And when I was done, I would rake it. I would water it. And then I'd always cover it. I'd cover it with a tarp. There was not going to be any rain get on that mound. And it was on that mound that I did all my dreaming. My mother was catching, and here I would be pretending I'm playing in the biggest stadiums in the world. I'm pitching against the best hitters in the world. But guess what the best part was? I was striking all of them out. I mean, I was doing some dreaming. The success started at an early age. I was bigger, I was stronger, I was a taller kid. I could throw the ball really hard. When I was 12 years old, my first All-Star game, I threw a perfect game, striking out 18 batters out of 18. That was my first experience with the media. For some reason, New York Times, Washington Post, ESPN called. They found out somehow, and they called. And I can remember my parents taking the phone off the wall, so we couldn't answer it anymore. It was just ringing and ringing. Back then, we had those rotary phones. We also had a party line then, too. When I was 13 years old, we finished third in the world at the Junior Little League World Series in Taylor, Michigan. And when I was 15 years old, we finished second in the Senior Little League World Series in Kissimmee, Florida. We lost to a team that a lot of you will probably know. They're in the Little League World Series all the time, Taipei, Taiwan. And we lost to them in the championship. We were very fortunate to have very good players. We were very fortunate to have very good coaches. Most of our coaches had played college baseball, and some of them had even played Major League Baseball. So we always had very good talent and very good coaching. The success would continue through high school. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you that dreams do come true. I dreamed that I would be the best pitcher in the whole world. And even though I never played in the major leagues, in 1989, I was the best pitcher in high school baseball. They can't take this away from me. I worked hard. I was very dedicated. I studied the game. That's all I did. And as I think about dreaming big, I wonder, how many of you are really, really dreaming big? Like, are you really dreaming as big as you can. I would bet there's some in here who aren't. And I bet you I know why. See, majority of my life, I was very fearful. I lived out of fear. And I was worried about what other people thought of me. I wanted you to like me. I wanted you to accept me. On and on and on. And some of you have this big dream on your heart that you think about nonstop. You obsess over it. But your thought is, oh, no, no, no. I can't do that. What if I fail? What are people going to say? I believe that God has given all of us unique skills, unique talents, unique abilities, unique experiences. And He does that because He wants us to use it. Not for us, but for Him. And when we do what we're good at, what happens? We make a difference in people's lives, plus we thrive. We do well. I'd encourage you this weekend or whenever, reflect. Is there something that's really on your heart that you're like, I got to do this. I got to do this before something really happens. Dream big. Those feelings I was telling you about, that negative mentality, it all started when I was 8 years old. And it lasted until I was 39. So for 31 years, I thought I wasn't good enough. I felt like I was fat. I didn't fit in. It was like I was born with this hole in my soul. And if I was playing baseball, that baseball would fill that hole. But every time else, I didn't feel comfortable. And it all started in Pee Wee baseball. Things were a little different back in the late 70s. We didn't have select baseball like they have today. We couldn't play baseball on an organized team until we were 8. And I can remember always asking my parents, hey, when can I play baseball? And my mom would say, not till you're 8 years old. And the next week I would ask again, hoping that maybe they change the rules. Hey, when can I play baseball on a team? And I can remember my mom would always say, John, not till you're 8 years old. So finally, here I am, 8 years old. And I'm selected to the Yankees. Back then, we were only supplied a hat and a shirt from the league. We didn't have these fancy uniforms like they had today. In fact, we wore blue jeans. And we wore tennis shoes or whatever you wanted, but blue jeans. Now, I'll be honest, I hated blue jeans. I still hate blue jeans. I wouldn't have admitted this a long time ago, but I will now. I was a fat kid. I was. I had a huge stomach, and I loved to eat. And if you put food in front of me, and you were going to eat, you better get your portion before me, because I was going to eat it up. But with pants, they never fit good. They were either really, really tight and not long enough, or they were really big in the waist and really long. And I felt kind of like a robot. Just, I couldn't move. If the pitcher threw 4 balls back then, we didn't just walk to first base. We got to hit off of a tee. So that day, I'm batting, ball 4 comes, umpire is going to get the tee ready. Now, what happens to the dirt in Texas during the hot summer when it has not rained? It cracks. It also gets really, really hard. And so that day, it was like it had a little grit of sand on it, and I'm getting ready to hit, and I can't get a good footing, and I'm slipping and sliding all over the place. Umpire puts the ball on the tee, gives me the green light to swing away. Usually I could hit the ball a long ways off the tee, but this time I couldn't get good footing, and as I swung, I hit the T about that much under the ball. And the T fell over, the ball dribbled over. But the biggest problem was I lost my footing. And as I swung around, I fell flat on my face. And I jumped up like, oh, hopefully nobody saw this, but by then people were already laughing. The bigger problem was our pants were snaps back then. The snap had come loose. I couldn't get it to snap again. And I thought, what am I going to do? I'm going to run to first base and my pants are going to fall down? Oh, I couldn't get it. And I swung two more times, and I struck out off the tee. And as I'm walking back to the dugout, I hear laughter. I hear teammates saying things. But what this brain hears is, you suck. We don't like you. You're no good in baseball. You're fat. And it went on and on and on. And that tape played forever in my mind, even with all the success. And it wasn't until March 27, 2010, that anybody ever knew that, when I was 39 years old. So for all my life, I held it in. See, I grew up in a time when I thought men had to be tough, that men couldn't cry, that we had to fix everything on our own. I always saw other kids laughing like they were happy-go-lucky, and I thought to myself, I'm doing something wrong. But I didn't feel like I could tell anybody. I felt like I had to be perfect. Because as I'm going through this record, ESPN, CBS, NBC, ABC, all the media are right there in the small town of Brenham watching me. And I felt like I couldn't just come out and say, hey, this is how I feel. So I'm 39 years old. And it had gotten worse. I really, really, really wanted to die on March 27, 2010. If I had a gun, I might have done it. But everything seemed like it was going downhill. I was recently divorced. I had two kids that I didn't want to take really a fatherly responsibility for. I was self-centered. I was angry. And I'm in a 3,700 square foot house all by myself. I'm watching the ESPN ticker go by at 2:30 a.m. in the morning and playing on the internet. But by this time, I had also found my best friend, and that was vodka. I can remember the first time I had vodka, I thought, whoa, ho, I've got some confidence now. I can say anything I want. This makes me complete. And I was drinking vodka, and I was screaming at God that I wanted to die. Many nights I would go to bed and say, God, please don't have me wake up. I'm worthless. I just want to go. But this night, something was a little different. As I'm screaming at God, as I'm really wanting it to just be gone, I hear a voice that says, it's okay. Just tell somebody. And it was like a calm, refreshing peace came over me. And for the first time in my life that I can remember, I picked up my phone and I reached out for help. Now, if you call many people at 2:30 in the morning, what happens? Not too many people answer. I left, I guess, voicemail after voicemail. But here I have a job that's going in the toilet. I decide I'm going to call my boss. And I called my boss. He answered. He said, "Hey, what's wrong?" I said, "Boss, I want to die." He goes, "I'm on my way over." And about 15 minutes later, he was there, and he said, "Tell me what's going on. Why do you want to die?" And I said, "Boss, here's the truth. I can't stop drinking." And when I told him that, it was like freedom bricks falling off. And I thought, and I told him, and the reason I didn't tell anybody, I thought people would say, "Oh, you're a drunk, you're a loser, you're an alcoholic," on and on and on. But since, or when I shared that with him and other people, I've never received anything negative like that. It's all been love, support, and encouragement. So for so many years, I hid how I felt for no reason. So you know I'm going to turn this back around on y'all now. I believe we're only as sick as our deepest, darkest secrets. So what is it you're hiding? What is it that you're keeping in that's maybe keeping you up at night? Maybe it's holding you back from really excelling in your job, in your work, in your company. Maybe it's holding you back in your marriage. I don't know. But I can tell you, the moment I became vulnerable and the moment I became okay with who I was, it was like another life. It was life-changing. It was like freedom. There's victory in vulnerability. And I would encourage you to be real. I have established some of the deepest relationships just by being real. You know, I always thought I was alone. I thought I was the only one going through this. And as soon as I started sharing, other people were like, "Yep, I felt that way too." Or, "I've got that same problem." But I want you to know, whatever it is you're going through, whatever it is you're struggling with, it's okay. We're all broken. But please tell somebody. The voice I heard that night was obviously God. I never had this personal relationship with God until I was 39 years old. I always believed in God. We always went to church, but I always felt like God was kind of beating down my throat. I was the kind of guy, if you beat something down my throat, I'm running this way, and I'm going to run fast. I don't want anything to do with it. I went to Texas A&M. I had 4 arm surgeries, and I lost my identity. I lost who I was. I was known as the baseball guy. I'd go to restaurants, and people would say, "Hey, I believe that's that John Peters kid there." And after baseball was over, that stopped. And so I started trying to find happiness in sex, drugs, alcohol, exercise, food, whatever I could put in this hole, that's what I did. But what I found out at the age of 39, all those things were temporary. And when I put God in this hole, for the last 11 years, it's been permanent. God was right there. God was right there the whole time, and here I am running away. But what I realized is when he grabbed onto my hand, that he hadn't let me go. And he wants the same thing for y'all. And I don't know where you're at with your spirituality, where you're at with God. But for me, my experience was the more I sought after him, the more I found him. It's like Jeremiah 29:13. Everybody likes to quote Jeremiah 29:11, but I like Jeremiah 29:13 when it says, if you seek the Lord with all your heart, you will find him. And I found him, and I keep finding him. And that's the only thing that's been permanent to fill this hole. So I encourage you to dream big. I encourage you to be real. And I encourage you to look up. What are you going to do when your world's coming to a halt? What are you going to do when it's falling apart? Who are you going to rely on? For me, I found that the only freedom, the only peace, the only happiness I could find was in Christ. So I'll leave you with this. Thank you for allowing me to share. The last thing I'll say is, God loves you. I love you. And there ain't nothing you can do about that.